Hello, I'm Andrew Finney, and welcome to the Nurse Researcher Podcast, a podcast aimed at all nurses at all levels interested in any aspect of a research career. We hope you find this podcast useful and enjoy listening to it. Do listen right to the end, where myself and Eleanor Hovard deliver a summary, and do give us a rating, review us, and do press subscribe or follow wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nurse Researcher Podcast. And as ever, I'm delighted to have a wonderful guest today. I have with us Professor Parveen Ali, who is a professor of gender-based violence. Have I got to check with you, Parveen? Have I got that title right?
Yes, so I am professor of nursing and gender-based violence, so both.
Because it's almost a harrowing title, isn't it? Because you think to yourself, that's not your speciality. That's what you're looking to prevent.
Yes.
So it's lovely to prevent. Mm. And it's lovely to have you with us today. So we're delighted to have you on the podcast. My pleasure. And for those listeners that are with us perhaps for the first time, this is about your career, and this is about people like yourselves who I know can be an inspiration to others. Perhaps telling us a little bit about how your research career came about and where you're at now and the kind of things that you do. But we always start off by asking the first question is, how and why did you become a nurse in the first place?
That's an interesting question, that how and why have I become a nurse? And I would say I didn't know much about nursing as in what they actually do. And what made me interested in nursing was the uniform, and that was Armed Forces Nurses uniform. So as a child, I used to be a very sick and unwell child. And my father used to work in Pakistan Navy as a civilian. So we used to go to the hospital for various treatments and stuff. And that's where the uniform there is very beautiful. Like if they wear white uniform or the khaki one, depending on. So it's very attractive. And I think that's my attraction, was that I wanted to get that uniform. I never got that uniform. I tried after I finished my nursing diploma program. So I did it soon after. So here it's the GCSE. So we've got a similar thing in Pakistan. So I completed that from Karachi. So after completing your GCSE, you go straight into nursing at that time. BSc nursing program was just starting up, but that used to be for post-RN BSCN program. So that's how I got into nursing. I didn't know I would be very much interested into it or not. I am eldest of six siblings, and at that time come from very humble background. So there was not so much so of career counseling in 1990s, where which would tell you like which professions should you go for or join. So that was my inspiration, actually. And I learned everything about nursing and what nurses do and everything else after joining nursing. And I think then I took it as a pride, as a challenge, every day was a different day. You didn't have similar challenges on each day. And I think sometimes I think it still is, but it's difficult. It used to be difficult to be an intelligent person into nursing. Not that nurses are not intelligent, but everybody else would tell you, why are you becoming a nurse? You could do something else. So you have to, and I used to take that as a challenge, that why shouldn't be me or somebody like who is, you know, who you suggest that you can be a doctor or you can be this, that, the other. Why shouldn't we be nurses? And I used to find it really difficult to understand that. And partly because it's a patriarchal country. Nursing was only sort of seen as it still has got this gendered element that it's only female profession. It wasn't necessarily for the mainstream. Girls from good families don't do nursing. That was the kind of perceptions that people would come and even tell your parents that, you know, didn't you find anything else for your daughter? that you've let them go to nursing. But what I am pleased about is that I was the first one from my family or the people around that who lived, or friend circles, if you like, or for my parents. And up until now, every 6 months, people do come back and ask my mother that, you know, would you say your daughter, my child, my son or my daughter wants to be a nurse? Can you help them? So I think coming from a place where nobody wanted, people were teasing your parents that your child is becoming a nurse and that therefore it's not appropriate, to a place where people would like their children to join nursing and come and ask for it. So I think it's a big, big change. And I'm quite proud that I've been able to be that change agent.
Yeah.
And to show people that it could be a respectable profession. So, of course, things have changed, but also it is about how you carry yourself and how what I did during the whole career in nursing, if that's...
Yeah.
So and... I did my diploma from a very small place in Karachi, from Ayasam Nursing Institute. It was diploma program. And then every nurse has to be a midwife, so completed diploma in midwifery from the same school. Then went on to do post RN, which is here we call it top up nursing degree program, but there it was post RN BSN, which is based on American and Canadian model, on the model of the McMaster University at that time it started. So it's 2 years post RN BSN program, which I completed, and then master's program. So that's all in master's and BSN from Aga Khan University, Karachi, Pakistan, which is the top university in there. And then came here to do PhD from School of Health and Related Research, University of Sheffield.
Yeah,
so wow. That's what my academic career was.
there's a number of questions answered there, actually. But
yeah.
I suppose that because we're talking about your research career and your academic career, you can clearly see that you could have been an inspiration for many in going on to be a nurse, because and that was something you wanted to do. But what was the step into academia? What major did you want to remain clinical, or did you choose to take an academic role in nursing? And when did that first come about? Was that with the PhD?
So I think when you move from one place to the other, it's different, and your journey kind of starts and restarts kind of all over again. I used to be quite academic in the sense that in the diploma program, and even at that time, I used to teach all the students. I was the first one who used to have a library in the school, which nobody actually opened, and it was locked. And I used to be the first students who get that unlocked and made it available to students. We used to use labs and everything else, you know, in terms of teaching and supporting other people trying to understand. And because there was not a lot of information available, and the curriculum was new, which meant that many of our teachers were not also very much prepared for that kind of curriculum. It was all about, at that time, it was nursing process and North American nursing diagnosis and all the rest of the stuff, which nobody actually knew quite a lot. So, you know, using medical surgical nursing books and doing all of that, teaching students, so learning about research, learning about evidence-based practice, learning about all those things that started from there. I think the first exposure to research came about during the bachelor's program, which made me learn about the concepts of research, statistics, epidemiology. Those were the modules which I did. But then first actual research was when I collected data for my master's thesis. So in Pakistan, master's program is still a 2 years program. So with 1 year is more sort of... Sorry, did you get the bell?
Barely. No, you're okay, carry on. Our listener, they recognize the fact that we do these interviews from home. It's absolutely fine, or from work.
So the first exposure to the master's program when I did my research, and it's 2 years program, which usually have first year as a course content where you complete modules, and then you do go through full proper research that like we do it here in the for PhD programs, which you have to go through ethics and ethical review committees, and after your thesis you have to do a public defense and all the rest of the stuff. So it's quite rigorous, so which then means that your research has to be quite rigorous as well. So I think that was my first exposure to research, and that's how I started working. I was interested in looking into domestic abuse and gender-based violence because I didn't think the definitions or what was presented in the academic papers was quite different what you actually see around you. And that made me interested to explore if there was something around, if people define domestic abuse differently. And I think, so to be honest, by the time I've completed master's, and we are talking about 2000, early 2000s, by that time, especially in Pakistan, there was no way or no opportunity for you, if you were a nurse, to go and do PhD. And in fact, even in the UK and many other countries as well. So I think opportunities for doing PhD within nursing were limited to a certain extent. But what was limited is that how would you use those opportunities after you do PhD in nursing? I hope it's not a wrong thing to say, but that's what my perception was. So then I did my PhD in there. And then how did I started doing nursing research? So at that time, I was at the verge of thinking, should I be a public health researcher? And I think there was also this thing that nurses who would go and go do PhDs in epidemiology or public health, many of them would stop calling themselves nurses because they were epidemiologists, so they were public health professionals. And for me, nursing identity has always been something very, very strong and something which I've always kept intact. So that's how then I got involved during my PhD, got involved into teaching at the school and started researching in both ways. So answer to your question, if it was practice, I think it was more. So when I, both of those things, when I came to UK, before coming to UK in Pakistan, it was a known name. It was kind of, you know, I was teaching at Aga Khan University already. So part of research in that sense. When I came to UK while doing my PhD, I started working in the care home and then with NHS Direct as a telephone triage nurse, because that suited well in terms of what I was doing. I had two children, was doing a PhD, so that was my time, that intellectual sort of stuff was PhD, and the job was practice. But then I was also research associate, so I think both went quite hand in hand. I cannot figure out which one was. I can't say that I've left practice to go into research or left research to go into practice, if that makes sense.
But did you apply for the PhD at Sheffield, or did you bring your PhD to Sheffield as such?
No, I applied for PhD in to the Sheffield University. So initially I went into, I remember going into this because it was looking at the gender-based violence and domestic abuse related topic. So I went into social sciences department and they asked me that you need to go and do another master's. And I was like, no, I'm not doing another master's. I've got master's in nursing and that's more than enough. And they were like, well, it's not sociological enough. So that's how I started. But then School of Health and Related Research. So my supervisor was, his interest was around mental health. So then I applied through him and there was university scholarships that were going on at that time. So I was one of the 16 recipients of the university scholarship. So that's how I got the scholarship in doing PhD. I was quite lucky enough to do that. Yeah.
And the first time I've asked this question of anybody on one of these episodes at this stage, but what was the most difficult adaptation to the UK or the PhD? Because actually they are both huge life-changing things. A PhD is life-changing. It lives with you. You know, it's a living thing that's never off your mind. It's what you do. And for somebody who's never done it, I suspect moving country is exactly the same. It must have been quite the challenge, a mother, a PhD, and, you know, start, you know, bringing the family into a different culture. How did you overcome all of those obstacles?
I think it just happened. And I think because I was just too busy doing it. So academia or writing academically and stuff was not that hard, maybe because of my interest, even from the diploma program. All that English and everything which I learned was by reading and by helping other people to understand this. I remember looking at articles in the library published in Journal of Advanced Nursing or nursing standard it used to be. Mm. So, those articles used to be written in a very simple language, and we used to use it for, and used to think, my God, who are these people who are publishing these articles? They must be so celebrities. They must be so important. How do they actually get that? Forget about being an editor or somebody being on the. I never thought one day I would be one of those people.
Mm.
So I think it was quite challenging, but because there was too many things going on in my life when I came to UK, I wasn't expecting pregnancy or children, but that happened. And that was, at that time, one of my friends challenged me. So, and he said, oh, now we will see. It was that I got admission into the PhD program, got scholarship. And at the same time, I found out that I was pregnant and I had a history of ectopic pregnancy. Nothing was happening. So I wasn't expecting a pregnancy.
Mm.
So my friend said to me, now we will see if you will do your PhD or if you will raise your child. And I said, well, I'll do both and you will see. it was that. But because I was new into the country, and so job was a requirement and I needed to do so, I didn't really think about it much. And I think for me, it was risk-taking and using the opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Which came, and I kept on taking those challenges and trying to solve it. So it was difficult, but because my personality is more about taking challenges and solving the problem, so I don't think I thought much. If I look back and look at that person now, I think it must have been really difficult and really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I won't be able to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
But
perhaps only because you know the journey.
But navigating the new system, learning through a new place, there used to be quite a lot of challenges. Language was one. I mean, I remember the first day when somebody was says he says, and I said, there's a grammar wrong here somewhere. Then I thought, well, no, it's their language, so they probably are speaking fine, and mine is wrong. It took me quite a long time to understand that spoken language is very different than academic language. The spoken language also has sort of, jargons or kind of small little things that people, so working in nursing home, it was difficult to understand when somebody was saying, I want to spend a penny or I want, and or gooden, it took me, or isn't it? Nobody says it's usually, so it was in Yorkshire, so it's an inne, and it takes 3 years to understand what.
These are wonderful reflections. They need writing up, I think, on their own, don't they? But I mean, you come across as somebody hugely determined and somebody that actually quite relishes the challenge, because if somebody's saying to you, now I'll see whether you raise your children or do a PhD, your response is, well, I'll do both. Has it been worth it? Did the PhD enhance your career? Are you where you are today, do you think, with the PhD as that the main stepping stone?
PhD has an important part. And of course, where I am in that sense, PhD has been a stepping stone in the sense, and it has been worth it. But I think I also had a sense of responsibility, have always had. For example, even before coming to UK, I mean, many people would talk about challenges and would probably say that it's quite difficult, where we are. And it has been, what I say is that being a successful person is not easy.
Mm.
People use all sorts of stereotypes for you. And being a successful woman is even more difficult. And coming from a country where, or place where initially nursing was not, like your choices are questioned all the time. You're the first one in the family who is going for any of that. So there are quite a lot of people who are coming and challenging your parents about that. People from the kind of your sort of the communities do not necessarily do nursing. So going to the Aga Khan University was quite challenging because it's like going to public school and private school. So where I studied was kind of a public school, and here is this shiny new building where people would like to think or want you to be surprised and not knowing everything. So I've always had that kind of a first person who is not only responsible for themselves, but somehow for others. So being an eldest, I had the responsibility to make it self-inflicted responsibilities, I would call them, to make it successful for myself and for my siblings. I didn't want them to experience the challenges which I thought I have navigated through. And then when I was in nursing, so everybody questioning the value of nursing, I wanted to prove that nursing is as respectable as any other profession, as valuable as any other profession. So then you got this hat about trying to prove nursing is good, trying to compete within the healthcare arena with doctors, with other people, trying to demonstrate that, you know, we are as good as any of you are, and you cannot question that. When came to UK, trying to again maybe somehow say, well, yes, I can do it, and if there is an opportunity, I will make use of it. And I would say earning it. So that's what made it easier. I mean, I remember during my first year of PhD program, there was a time when it was really very, very stressful. So I had 4 months old baby, 3 months old baby. And my husband was really unwell, and he was admitted to hospital for about 4 months. And at that time in my life, if I could leave anything, it was the PhD, that was the only thing which could be dropped, nothing else. And I think support is important. And I remember my sister saying one day on the phone, saying, you know what, I know it's really difficult, I know you must be very challenging for you, but if you can, please don't think of dropping your PhD. And I think that kind of faith in you, where others sort of kind of, it was not only your success, but others were looking at up for or to you that you will be successful. I think that kept me going.
Yeah.
So it was challenging, but it just happened. And I think it happened at such a fast pace that I went through one thing to the other. And there were supportive mentors around, perhaps, which has made it easier. And I think attitude and personality, where I can't think of the problems for a very long time.
Yeah.
I have to find solutions very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
For anything. And I think that sort of attitude perhaps has helped.
That makes absolute sense. Thinking of your work, so what we'll do is, the session notes for this podcast, we'll ask you if we can list some of your top publications, the things you're proud of, you know, anything that you want us to link on there. So the listener will get a chance to have a look at your work. And that work around gender-based violence and the work that you've done will predominantly lead to future aspirations. But the aspiration for you, was it to become chair and professor, or was that your goal, or did somebody suggest that to you? Did somebody go, do you know what, you should go for professor, or was it a natural process or the last thing you expected?
Becoming a prof, I think it was one of my, where I was at the time of the career. So, so I completed my PhD in 2012, around that time. And then I started working as a lecturer at University of Hull, and then came back to Sheffield in 2014 and then stayed there in Sheffield as a lecturer and then senior lecturer. So I think being a professor was my next step that was definitely there, that, you know, I cannot work aimlessly. I need to have an aim in my life, whether... it doesn't matter if I don't get to that kind of, you know, if I say like, well, fine, I need to. So for instance, I had this aim that I will finish my PhD before I'm 35. And you work towards it and try and achieve it in that sense. So maybe what you were asking before, maybe that was something which has helped, that, okay, despite having family responsibilities, other things, like, because this was something at the back of your mind, so you tried doing it. And I think for me, I had this aim that I would like to be a professor, become professor. I didn't know if I can or not. That is, you know, you could always try. But and so therefore, I would look for, okay, fine, what is it that I need to be able to achieve to get to that state? And it's usually like, you know, what is it that you need to get to the next state? And the next thing was that I wanted to be an editor-in-chief. That time I was editor of Nursing Open, working with Professor Roger Watson and colleagues in there. So these two were my aims. So I wouldn't say they were not my aims. Yes, they do. I had given myself a couple more years for it. So a position came in at the University of Sheffield. It was a new position and I applied for it. And I applied for it thinking, usually you would see that, you know, many people say that it's really difficult to get a new job in your own place where you're working because there are quite a lot of, so I had quite a lot of discussions with myself, should I apply for it or not? And I thought, okay, fine, I'm not losing anything. I've got a job. What it means is that I'm exposing myself, kind of, you know, sitting in front of interview of your own colleagues is not that easy. But I pushed myself to do it. And I thought, okay, fine, this is a practice run. At least I would start preparing as to what an interview for professor looks like. And that's how I went for it. I didn't think, well, I would like to think that I didn't think that I would get it. But I guess when you apply for something, there's a degree that you always, you know, you won't apply for something if you're not that interested. But I was ready to not to get it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in that sense, it was slightly sort of premature because then I was lost. It's like after once you've done your PhD and you just don't know what do I do now when your PhD is finished. But it has been so I got the position in 2021 started in September. I think what was challenging that the position also involved working with a trust. So it was a dual sort of position working at university as well as a trust. And I think that was a bigger challenge and a new challenge, which made it interesting, quite new learning. I wanted to apply for it, but I don't think I was expecting at that time. I would have given myself a couple more years to get to it. So,
and there's perhaps never a right time, is there? So that probably was the right time for you. What are you most proud of from a research perspective? So from your research career, and I'm going to say thus far, because I'm sure there's plenty of it left, what are you most proud of? Is it an element of work? Is it an element of promotion or title? Because for somebody who I've heard today, you know, was probably going into a profession that other people didn't respect when you were young, to be doctor and then professor, you must have made yourself proud just in the roles that you've got. But work-wise and research-wise, what are you most proud of?
I've been lucky enough to have quite a lot of firsts in my kind of career. So, the you know, for various different things mainly. So that's been, but what I've been more proud of is, okay, fine. What I'm most proud of that, you know, what I told you about the Journal of Advanced Nursing. So first thing which I, my fear was that, or expectation that I wanted to publish in that journal. And I thought it was an impossible task. And I eventually got published in that journal. So I think that was kind of, it sounds silly a little bit now that I'm an editor of the journal, in the editorial board of the journal, but it's those aspirations that you have. I'm proud of my work in terms of its practical applications around gender-based violence and domestic abuse, the way I've kind of, you know, converted that into a practical element. So for example, I've got a Future Learn course looking at supporting victims of domestic abuse, which has got more than 22,000 students from all across the world, 90% positive feedback, despite being on a very sensitive sort of subject area. I'm quite proud of, like, we converted that into a digital and interactive game, which can be used in the classroom settings or other places to help people talk about domestic abuse. And these were the first ones, like when I started talking about that, okay, can we convert this into a game? People were like, are you crazy? Are you talking about domestic abuse, something that sensitive, and you are trying to trivialize it by making it into a game? But that has worked brilliantly in terms of, like, you know, how students, you can sit students there in the class and for 3 hours, nobody would complain. Nobody would even want to go out of the class. And if you compare otherwise, you to in 20 minutes, 30 minutes in, you see people yawning and sleeping and kind of, you know, not very interested into it. So that was excellent. So there are quite a few examples of that kind of translation. My latest one is the book between the comprehensive guide about gender-based violence, which has got 42 chapters from all across the world talking about different forms of abuse. So there are quite a lot of things, but I think it's mostly my ability to put them into practical guides or practical resources that people could, that I am quite proud of. And most recent is the SOAR tool that we are developing with my team, Professor Jill Cook, Professor Judy McGarry, and colleagues from all across the country has helped develop it, but it's self-assessment for organizational readiness. And I hope that it will make a lot of impact. So that's what I am very proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. And you come across as somebody that doesn't just climb the mountain, you get to the top. You know, climbing the mountain was, I want to get published in the journal, and then you become an editor. So you probably get to the top of the mountain with that. So it's for all probably the hardship and the difficulties, you sometimes forget them, don't you? Look back with rose-tinted glasses sometimes on things, but it is difficult to be where you are and to get where you've got to and to establish yourself in the way that you have. So it all feels positive, but if you had your time again from your research career perspective, would you do anything differently now?
Probably not. Probably I would do the same journey. I'm quite proud of being a nurse and being able to take those things together. So I've got equally strong profile within the context of gender-based violence and within the context of nursing and nursing research. And I'm quite proud of that. And I think I would probably but what I would do differently, maybe a little bit more kind to myself. Maybe have a little bit more confidence on myself. But you see, migration, going to other countries, setting yourself up again into a place where there are so many stereotypes placed on you is not easy. Like climbing through those sorts of challenges and working through it is not an easy thing to do. But I think what has kept me going is that sense of responsibility. When you're the first one in many, I'm the only, I hope I'm not wrong in here, but among the 120 something journals that we have, I'm the only editor who's from a Pakistani background or Asian background of a nursing journal. Yeah. And that's International Nursing Review. I'm the editor-in-chief of that. I'm the first ever British Pakistani professor of nursing, and I was at that time I was the first ever female professor of any disciplines when I kind of joined when I became prof. It's not been easy, but I think I wouldn't have had it any differently in terms of how I have done it or the choices which I have made.
Really interesting answer. So my final question for you, and this is probably uniquely to you, those people that perhaps said to your parents, are you sure she wants to be a nurse? Or said to people around you that, is that all she wants to be, a nurse? Mm-hmm. Isn't there anything better? What do you think they'd say about you now?
Oh, many of them have asked their own children to, children or grandchildren to be nurses. And a couple of particular families have done that. A couple of particular families in my own family and my in-laws, people are doing it. And I think that in itself is a change, isn't it? And that makes you feel proud, because something that you have done somewhere which has made them see that, no, it's a good profession. And I think people usually see it from the perspective of what can you actually do? If practically speaking, if all this talk about nursing or this is a noble profession is all good and all the rest of this is all fine. But if people don't see a career pathway and, somebody progressing and getting to the top, it just becomes kind of invisible. And that's what we struggle with nursing, that, people still do not necessarily know what nursing is, what nurses do, and where can it get you? So I think many of them are very proud. Many of them have made their own decisions about their own children to come to those. So I'm quite proud of that sort of stuff. But what I've learned from all my life is that we need to do better in terms of selling nursing, in terms of, not making nursing feel like it's a job where you don't need to be intelligent, where you don't need to be kind of, you just need those characteristics which are inherent, not it's a calling. It's a profession, and we need to develop people around that. We need to talk about the opportunities which nursing gives you. I wouldn't have been where I am today if it wasn't for nursing. So I'm the first in my family, but I've got three of my other siblings who then became nurses just because I was a nurse and they liked that profession. Now, how often do you actually see that sort of thing? And especially, from the kind of background that I come, and all of them are successful in their own right. So what I would like to see different is that having that kind of positive attitudes about nursing, displaying positive things that nurses and nursing can do for people. It helps whole families. It just doesn't develop one person. It just develops the whole, it changes the whole family in many ways. Yeah. And I know we don't have much time, but the importance of mentorship and support, there are quite a lot of people who are there to support you, to mentor you, to help you learn things, and I don't think we celebrate them enough. And if I ever get a chance, I think it would be a good podcast for people to talk about who has influenced or what sort of mentorship opportunities that people have.
Yeah.
And I can name quite a lot of people who have learned from just by observing, by actively or by passively mentored by. But I think it's overall nursing has been kind, nursing has been useful, and I think those people are very proud. And the fact that they have made that profession available to their family means that it has changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, quite clearly, you've inspired people, you've been an inspiration, and I'm sure we'll get feedback for this podcast saying exactly the same. You know, everything that you spoke about. You've had more obstacles than many of us and many of the professors that we've spoken to already. So it's been lovely to listen to your story and hear from you today. So Professor Parveen Ali, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and I hope it was useful.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Hello and welcome back to this latest episode of the Nurse Researcher Podcast with myself and Eleanor Hovard. And Eleanor, neither of us know Professor Parveen Ali particularly well, but both of us were quite blown away with the interview. Isn't that right?
Yes, absolutely, Andrew. I mean, gosh, what an inspirational story Parveen tells. And I think if I could do this summary in one word, I would say determined, because right from the start of her story, you get this sense of determination that has seen Parveen through some really tough times by the sounds of things. But I was also intrigued by what she was saying about the view and the value of nursing in Pakistan, if you were brought up in a good home, and how it was almost frowned upon if you should go into nursing, which she explained to us later that she has now, through her own work, created an example of how you can become a nurse and turn it into a very fulfilling research career, showing us that she's now a role model, not just in the UK, but Pakistan as well. And I think what really struck me about Parveen's story, though, was how every time she was faced with a challenge, like when she moved to the UK and had to learn the language and the different slang terms or phrases, or was faced with doing a PhD and raising a baby, coping with the stress of her husband being ill in hospital, I mean, everything seemed to happen. She maintained this can-do mindset. Nothing would get in her way. And I thought it was interesting, too, how she described individuals who publish in the Nursing Standard as being almost like a celebrity. Made me think of, do others think that too? And it seems like such an almost impossible goal, or not, as in Parveen's case. I mean, she's now the editor of a journal as well. But she has such a spark in her voice, and I love that she can see the funny side of things as well. But I really actually what she started with. I really wanted to see that uniform as well that she described in Pakistan, the one thing she really wanted and she didn't get it. So I'd really like to see that. It's interesting though, isn't it? She clearly had aspirations and surpassed her own aspirations, you know, when she applied for her professor post and had to prepare herself for not getting the post and almost was surprised when she got it. So an absolutely incredibly inspirational story. Loved listening to Parveen's story, and I'm sure she's going to continue inspiring many others as well.
Yeah, and it was one of those where, I mean, I often think the guidance when we started this was always to sort of try to keep your episodes between about 30 and 40 minutes. And we usually do that. We probably go a little bit over because of our summary. But Parveen's one of those people where you were thinking to yourself, I could just keep going here. There's lots more I could pick at, but I'm conscious of the format that we're trying to share, because there was just so much I would have wanted to have known about its impact on personal life, the impact it's had on other roles, because there's a whole Royal College of Nursing role that she does with research that we didn't really discuss and didn't have time to discuss, because, you know, she's very senior in the RCN as well. So she's had a real influence in what is still, really, when you think back to when she came here, it's still a new country. You know, it's still a new way of life, isn't it? And I think moving house is probably the most stressful thing I've done. And she's moved country, you know. Then I think probably the other most stressful thing I've done is bring up babies and small children. And then she's done that, move house by moving country, and then started a family and done a PhD. And I think what she said was she just didn't realise when she was in the middle of it quite how stressful it was. She just had to keep going. And she's somebody that rises to the challenge, isn't she? I think if you tell her something's not going to happen for her, she'll make sure it does happen.
Yeah, it almost stokes up the fire in her belly more. You could feel that, couldn't you? Don't tell Parveen she can't do something, because she's going to do it. Yeah. And it was that determination that really came through, I thought. And I absolutely loved it.
It flipped it a little bit, really. She has, you know, we've heard so much from past professors so far about that imposter complex and being in the right place at the right time and almost being apologetic for success at times. Whereas she's, you know, had to overcome so much adversity that she really owns it now.
Yeah.
She owns that success. And that's how nurses should feel per se, I think. Yeah. You know, own your success, celebrate your wins. And she's so strong-minded, perhaps because of the many challenges. And I noticed a line where she said being successful as a woman is even more difficult. So, again, gender, that's not something I'd think about with these sorts of things. So perhaps there's another obstacle, isn't it, that gender issue to overcome. So, you know, to be an Asian lady who's come from Karachi and Pakistan over to the UK, to Sheffield, to do a PhD, at a time in her life where she was young and starting a family and learning a new culture, it's unbelievable, really. It is unbelievable.
It is. You're right. And I think, you know, she clearly, her resilience obviously grew and grew and grew. So whatever was coming her way that was a challenge or a problem, she speaks of this way of seeing it as, well, what is the solution? And she doesn't waste any time, doesn't she? It's right, let's get on this. Let's get this sorted now. But the mindset that she does have is clearly helped her you know, this can-do mindset to get to where she is.
And just for the listener, I don't tend to probe people's personal focus of their research, and that's because really this is more about them and their career than the research. And again, people probably might be thinking, well, why don't you ask her a little bit more about the supporting victims of domestic violence? But I'm always conscious that I don't know what's behind that, you know, what's driven that need. And what I don't want to do is unpick anything that might cause emotions in people. And that's one area particularly where you think to yourself, I don't want to probe too much into that. And I, for that reason, irrespective of who the interviewee is, I always say, send us your best work and it'll be in the notes, because I don't want to probe too much the topic of the research, because that's not what we're here for. We're about the nurse researcher and their journey. So I don't want people to think that I didn't emphasize that supporting victims of domestic violence. It's just like many things like that. I'm not pushing for the content and the topic. I'm more pushing for the person and how they overcame it. So I don't want people to think that I hadn't recognized the importance of that work. And we'll make sure that Parveen is putting that in the lecture notes. And not lecture notes, even in episode notes. That's That's an academic for you, isn't it? Lecture notes rather than episode notes. But maybe we could also get a photograph of that uniform.
Do you know, I'd love to see that. Yeah. I mean, I had a picture in my mind of what it might look like, but it would be really interesting to see what that was.
I can say, as a male nurse in the UK, nothing about the uniform that attracted me to nursing. You know, the horrible tunic and the itchy, scratchy trousers when I started. You know, there was nothing about the uniform that attracted me to nursing at all. But I get that. I think it was a professionalism that she recognised more than her parents and her parents' friends and family and friends realised. She's already to the profession very early on and has climbed the professional ladder so much so that at the end, when I was saying, would people be proud of you? The question was answered by saying, well, they've now guided people to be nurses. So the second and third generations of their families are now doing nursing, and she's really triggered that.
Yeah, she did say, didn't she? And she's really carved that path. And that was another thing for her as well. She also described herself as being the eldest, didn't she, of six children. So I suppose maybe what comes with that is being a bit of a natural born leader as well. You're guiding the way for not only your siblings, but she's also guided the way for other individuals in Pakistan and the UK to think about aspiring to become not only a nurse, but, you know, this incredibly successful researcher as well. So really inspiring story.
And I suppose it's inspiring people of your own heritage in this country as well. I mean, did she describe herself as the first Asian female professor?
Yes,
in the UK.
She did.
I mean, you can't play that down, can you? That's because we always talk about people trailblazing, and that's what you want. You want role models. So she's trailblazing, and she is a role model, isn't she, for other people of Asian heritage trying to develop roles and feel like they can climb the ladder in nursing.
Yeah.
So there's a lot we can unpick, and I think there's a lot that we can take into the notes on this as well, because she also talked about a sort of domestic abuse training game, and I'm thinking, training game, how does that come about? You know, you wouldn't put the two together, would you?
Maybe you need another episode. Yeah.
Yeah, links to those sorts of things. And perhaps further down the line to speak to Parveen a little bit more. Some way or other, you know, perhaps a bonus episode to get some of the content further down the line, because I feel this with a lot of people, particularly with Parveen. There was so much more I could have unpicked. I was just conscious of trying to get that episode timing right and wanting the listener to feel like it's something they could listen to in one go. I'm always conscious that if people are walking a dog, or, you know, if they're driving to work, or there's a time when they listen to a podcast, you want to make sure that you give them, keep to that time for them.
Of course. And there's more of a focus in this podcast around developing your career, isn't there?
Yeah.
And so, like you say, there's perhaps other opportunities in the future to discuss more around those particular topics or areas where professors and nurses are focusing their research, particularly if it's a sensitive area like Parveen's gender-based violence.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm hoping we can raise awareness of that through this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So to bring us to a close, thank you again. I haven't told you this, Eleanor, but this week, 8 listens in Australia, 2 in Canada. Wow. We've had listeners in the United Arab Emirates. We've had a listen in Fiji. Thank you to that person in Fiji who is listening to the podcast. This week, we've had listens in New Zealand, the United States, Germany, Sweden, Denmark, and Portugal.
That's amazing.
So in small numbers. So I will say to these people in those countries, thank you for listening, and do share, you know, share across your own region, your own country. The more listeners we get, the better it is. We feel like it's having a greater impact. But when I'm looking at the analytics and you're thinking somebody's listening in Fiji, that's wonderful. So if you're listening to this episode in Fiji, then thank you very much. We're delighted to have you listening. And it feels like we're doing what we aimed to do to get the message across, you know, broadly to people about nursing careers and nurse researchers as a whole. So
absolutely.
That probably brings this episode to a close. Thanks for your time again, Eleanor.
Thanks,
Andrew. Speak to you soon.
See you soon. Take care.
Bye.